Hello there, podcast listener. Hope you're doing really well today. I am excited to share with you an episode where I have Anna in the studio. Anna is one of our first certification students. She's just about to graduate, and she shared something with the group in our Slack channel that I thought was really, really, really insightful. It was about how the most natural state we are in is a state of peacefulness and a state where sleep happens, and we sometimes disallow that state by trying to make it happen. And we're going to talk more about this in this episode, where we also answer questions from the community. We answer a question from somebody who is anonymous, who's wondering if it is normal to have a lot of sleep anxiety several months after having started to sleep better. We answer a question from Lara as well, who's asking about depersonalization and derealization experiences, as well as Daniel, who also had an episode where he slept much better but has some anxiety around it again. So hope you'll find a lot of value in this episode, and hope you have a really nice day. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Open Class number 91, in which we have Anna with us. Welcome.
Hey, everybody. So happy to be here.
I'm super glad you're here. First time on the channel. So actually, just, let's the community know a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Yeah. So I found Coach Daniel after I had kind of a mild insomnia bout after some relational distress a couple years back. And I found Coach Daniel when I was looking for kind of resources to learn about potentially becoming a sleep coach myself. So his channel, as soon as I found it, really resonated on a lot of levels. And so since then, I've enrolled in the certification program with the Sleep Coach School for coaches. And I'm finishing up this week with the official run of it. So exciting.
That's amazing. Yeah. That's amazing. And I said this to actually Michelle, who's also in the school, like, I can't wait to do, like, next time you're on the show, you're going to have like Coach Anna down there in the title.
I love it.
You're amazing.
Yeah.
So already, like, I'm just a little bit curious here, and I think everybody will want to know this too. It's like, so when you had that period of trouble sleeping, you pretty soon after that, you the thought came like, I want to help others with sleep. Did it come pretty soon after that? Or where do you think that thought came from?
Yeah, it just came from, at the time I was working as like a personal assistant to a mom. It was an amazing job. It was a lot of nanny kind of work, cooking, laundry, help with organization. But it didn't feel like I was on like a mission that had a lot of deep meaning. And the part that I love the most about it was when I can really connect with that mom who's my friend, and kind of help her work through something difficult in her life. We did a lot of that, a lot of talking. So I kind of figured out that health is also really like important to me in my life. So I've been kind of on this hunt trying to figure out like where's my happy spot for kind of a employment kind of situation. So yeah, it did. It kind of came up quickly.
So these thoughts were already in your mind when you had that episode of trouble sleeping, and then you said, aha, this is what I'm going to do. Or did it come after that?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
So interesting. So you've done a lot of coaching already there.
Yeah, I have done quite a bit. The funny thing is that when I first thought I want to be a sleep coach, I was going to be a sleep optimization coach, like someone like basically like help people get, you know, effort to better sleep and like get their schedule and their light and dark and all the things that can really lead you down the rabbit hole when you try to use them to force sleep. And it's been this huge, like through my own journey, I was like, well, that doesn't really help that much. It's not a really empowering model, you know, to come from.
So it's so interesting for you to share this, because I know you, and I know you're like, you know, 100% intent on helping people. And I can see how a lot of people who become sleep optimization coaches probably come from a good place. They want to help people. They just don't really understand that what they're doing is probably not often the best. So yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah. So I want to start with actually, before we go to our questions for today, I'm going to read a quote from yourself that I thought was really insightful. And we could share some nuggets of wisdom with our community here. So there was this thread where we were talking about kind of like, it started with actually Hugo talking about how, like, he was asking the question of, can you intentionally do something to become less attached? That was kind of the starting point. Mm-hmm. And then you said the following, where is it? Oh my gosh, I almost know it by heart. So I'm tempted to just go by heart, but I know it's here. So I want to read it. Here it is. No, it's not. Oh my gosh. Okay. I'm just going to read it from my head. No. Okay. Sorry about that, everyone. That was kind of embarrassing. Okay. So I know it pretty much by heart. So you said something to this effect that, wellness is a natural state that exists or comes back when there's nothing to disallow it, either from within ourselves or from the environment. So can you talk more about that?
Yeah. So there's kind of two big things to this, to me, on a big picture level. One is that I believe that it's true. You can look around and notice that basically, if you're not doing something to mess it up or having something done to you, that you're going to be in a state of well-being. And with sleep, the kind of the thing with that is we all have a natural ability to sleep. And what holds us back from that is really what is most helpful to address, which is our hyperarousal, our excitement or nervousness or anxiety that often turns its attention on sleep, you know, once we start trying to fix that problem. And then the other part is that I just think it's a really empowering belief to move towards adopting for all of life. Because, you know, in your model, Daniel, that you talk about, the, you know, our feelings follow our thoughts. So, and belief is just a thought that you've gathered a lot of evidence for, right? So if you can take an empowering belief and just start to gently gather evidence, don't say like, I'm going to, you know, this is already what I believe. Don't try to make the leap necessarily, but if you can start to move towards believing that wellness is our most natural state versus sickness that needs to be addressed, that, that's going to be a really, really helpful thing.
Absolutely. And yeah, I'm totally believe it. And I think what is can be so confusing is that when you're having trouble, it seems like you, of course, have to do something. And then when you do better, it seems like you did something. So it can be tricky to see that the natural state is that we feel well, we are at peace of mind, we sleep well, and it is everything we do that kind of keeps us from being there. Now, where did you pick up the word disallow?
I am just going to make a guess. I'm not quite sure, but I'm thinking I picked that up from a teacher called Abraham Hicks. It's it's basically a spiritual teacher. It's a really interesting, the kind of structure of these teachings can throw people off because it's a woman who channels this entity. She's just called Abraham. So that part's like can be a little out there for some people. But yeah, she talks about, I related one concept she talks about to your gas and brake, which is an upstream, like what turning upstream or turning downstream. And when you're turned upstream, you're like trying and working and you're really working against like making everything hard for yourself. And that would be like having the brake on in the gas and brake model. And then turning downstream, you just let go, you know, and there you go. So disallowing would be the turning upstream or putting the brake on.
Yeah, no, that's That's a great word. I think I have to ponder that one more and use it more often. But perfect. Mm-hmm. We have Zoltan said hi here. We're all
good. Hey, Zoltan.
Jake also says hi. Hi, Jake.
Hey.
Perfect. So let's go over these four questions today. Where do I have them? Here, of course. So let's read this. First is from someone in the community here who actually wants to stay anonymous. So let's read this. I'm a little embarrassed to say that I'm currently experiencing a minor setback with my sleep anxiety. I'm letting my thoughts get the best of me lately. I was doing so good. I wasn't tracking anything. I was sleeping regularly again up until about Thursday. And randomly, my mind began to notice how well I was doing. And I've been falling asleep later and later every night. It's a little discouraging. And with everything you've taught, I know I should be okay. It's just more annoying at this point. I guess I just want to know if setbacks, even this far, are a normal thing. I mean, 3 consecutive nights of hyperarousal aren't a normal thing for me anymore. So I'm just thinking, what is going on with me? I'm definitely more self-compassionate with myself this time, just a little frustrated that I'm letting my thoughts overpower what I've learned and letting the bear that I know doesn't exist slowly try to reappear again. Ugh. Thank you again, Coach Daniel. So someone who has been tuning in, learning a lot, doing well for a long time, this mm-hmm. happens. What are your initial thoughts on this, Anna?
Well, my initial thought is that this setback, or as Daniel calls speed bump, is really an indicator of all the progress that you've already made. And don't forget that. If you said you've been doing so well, that, you know, that's amazing. That's so great. And if you do, just let this be a little, maybe a blip, speed bump. I think that you will likely be able to return to that doing so well. The other thing that jumped out is that you said you were embarrassed. And I totally hear you. You want to be living from this place where you know better or whatever, but even that embarrassment, or just the fact that you're having this experience, that's like, I would say, another thing that gives you opportunity to accept and to not try to push it away. Like, you already know, you've got the concept with sleep. You know, you don't want to run away from the bear. You also don't want to run away from your frustration that the bear is sneaking back up into your mind, right? So that, I think that'll be helpful to just, when that does come up, just say, oh, there's that thing again. And it's actually okay. It's understandable. It's totally okay that this is popping back up. It doesn't mean I'm going to, you know, go back to exactly how things were and it's going to stay that way. It's just the brain seeking out safety again, doing its job. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Totally agree. And, you know, you used the kind of the bear analogy, like, you know, we know there's no real bear, but the bear could be other things, like you say, like embarrassment can become the bear. Like, I don't want to be embarrassed. Then you become more embarrassed. And then, like, you're trying to escape another thing that becomes. So, yeah, nothing to be embarrassed about. And also, yes, it's completely and utterly normal and expected. Mm. Like, I think everyone who's ever had trouble sleeping will have periods of time where there's some trouble sleeping. And now it's, you know, 3 nights seems like odd now, but it's just another opportunity to see that if you don't do anything, you'll sleep well again. And then this will happen less and less and less. And then I guess the last thing, I know I go into this one so much, but I'll ask you about this one, Anna. I think there was a component here of like, I'm kind of letting my thoughts get the best of me. I'm kind of embarrassed because even though I know all these things, I'm still having anxiety. I'm still having these thoughts. They still come to me. How would you coach on that? Or what are your thoughts on that one when you feel like I'm letting my thoughts get the best of me?
Yeah. It's tough because it is kind of turning your thoughts into your thoughts about your sleep struggle into like another thing to be afraid of. And thoughts are going to come and they will often just pass on. But giving them this weight that, you know, if I have this thought, it might mean that I'm regressing, you know, that's going to make it, it's basically, that's a way to hold on to that thought and make it bigger. Because you can't get away from a thought. You can acknowledge it. And often that's all it takes to let it continue on eventually.
Yeah, absolutely. And it actually goes back to what we talked about before. I think like about like peace of mind or thoughts are kind of fleeting in the natural state, if you will, like when we're not disallowing them, we're not fighting mm-hmm. them, trying to get away from them. They're fleeting. And when you try to give them meaning, like you said, then they become more sticky. So yeah, perfect. Well, let's jump on to our next question. Actually, this was like a super quick message, but I didn't want to not bring it up because then it feels like kind of we're ignoring somebody. It was Samuel left a message, which just said, please help, I can't sleep. And I just want to say, Samuel, that, you know, we got the message, of course, and we're sorry to hear this happening, but glad you're here. And I would say, like, just look through the channel. I think in the description of every new video, you will see like these two playlists. One is called This Is Nato and one's called Success Stories. Those are great places to start. So just start learning there, see how things go, and then you can ask more questions here. Hang in there, Samuel. Okay, now let's go to Lara. I'm going to say Lara. Maybe it's Laura, but I'll say Lara. Hello, Daniel and Michelle. And this was, you know, we Lara had a question in the previous open class as well. Hello, Daniel and Michelle. Thank you for answer on last YouTube. I have one more. This is the last one, I promise. No problem. You can send as many as you want. Since my psychologist said that I experienced depersonalization, feeling of not knowing myself, and derealization, I'm feeling I'm not knowing my parents and my home because of lack of good sleep. From January, when I started to have those problems, I was waking up with pain in my muscles, extremely tired, same time when those disorders started. My question is it normal for also healthy people to lose REM phase of sleep one period? As I said, it's like 3 months like that. And besides that, I don't have other problems. I notice hypnic jerks and also that my teeth, like my mouth just close or my leg or arm just makes a jerk. If I really have a prion problem, do you think I would also develop other symptoms? I'm worried about Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease mostly because I have those mental and sleep problems, which I said are the first problems in young people. Because all that was happening to me, I'm worried that maybe I'm really sick and that my derealization could be dementia or something like that. Sorry to bother you. Your answer would mean a lot to me. Anytime, Lara, and I can comment on this first, which I'll just say that it's one of the most common questions, actually, which surprised me when I started this YouTube channel, was that so many people are worried about prion diseases, sporadic fatal insomnia. And I just want to say that those are like very, very significant neurological conditions whereby it would be very obvious to someone. And again, nothing here is medical advice to you, Laura, or anyone else. Nothing is medical advice, just sharing general thoughts here. But those are really things that are obvious to other people. Like you have obvious neurological problems, and it's not something subtle. And the tricky thing is that the person who has it, it's kind of like Alzheimer's or Parkinson's. The person who has it at some point doesn't really understand what's happening. They aren't really aware of it. And there's not this component of anxiety. I want to say that when somebody is like worried, trying to figure it out, reading, researching, that to me is a surefire sign that, I will say that is a sign of not a neurological disease, but that's a sign of insomnia. But so going back to the earlier part of this question, there were these this kind of like feeling like you're not really yourself. You have memory problems, struggling with finding names of things, and then the psychologist comments on that. Like, you know, just your general thoughts on that. Anna, what are your thoughts?
Yeah,
on your-
I'm glad you asked. That's the thing that most jumped out at me, actually. It sounds like there's these kind of conditions that a psychologist has said are happening because of short sleep, depersonalization, derealization. And it sounds like the question Lara is asking is, does this mean whatever? Does this mean I'm getting dementia? Does this mean I'm going to have some other health consequences? It's related to all these other terrible things. I get it can be scary to not know what's going on, to feel out of control completely. However, I think asking this question is going to work against where you really want to get to with sleep, just because it puts basically more weight onto whether or not you sleep. And I think I would also ask you, like, what do you think? I'm sure the psychologist is very skilled and is observing what you're saying, but like, do you feel like you're feeling less like yourself? Do you feel like you're distant from your family, from where you live and all this? And if so, I would say that a really more empowering thing is to think about what you'd like to move towards in that situation versus away. Moving away creates fear, you know, feeling of danger, and those feelings are just gonna build and amplify. But if you, if you want to feel more like yourself, you can use a question to stimulate your brain to find the answer. Brains love questions. They love to take a question and then go on the hunt for the answer, right? So asking something like, what's something I could do to feel more like myself today? Or what's something I could think about, a memory maybe I could think about that would help me feel more connected to my family? And your brain will go to work. And, you know, you could sit and journal about this. You could call somebody and tell them about it, make a video for yourself, however you want to do it. But just don't forget that you have whatever condition you have, you know, whatever diagnosis you have the ability to direct your focus and move towards things that feel good as well.
Yeah, absolutely. That's so great. And this is why I love, one of the reasons I love having guests and sharing thoughts, because that you answered in a way I would never have answered that question. And it makes total sense. Like, I love this, like this, using that problem solving part of the brain in a positive way by giving it a question that's already kind of directing you to where you want to be. Mm-hmm. That's really great. And I want to say, what I want to add to that is, what was this? Oh, this is also on the Slack channel. Well, somebody basically asked, like, is it true that if I sleep very little, my serotonin levels will go lower? And then you reply to that pretty much exactly what I feel is the most helpful, which is similar to when this, Lara here asks, like, if I sleep a little, is it true that this and that will happen? So what else, I'll ask you, like, totally. What did you reply there? And I think this is for Lara as well.
Yeah, it was about serotonin. So I guess besides if it, so asking that question is like I said, putting more pressure on sleep, because, you know, if sleeping little is going to cause this other thing that's also going to turn into this other bigger thing, then it's like, well, you better sleep. And that you better sleep is going to keep you up at night. I feel my heart rate going up just thinking about having that thought, you know, for sure. And anybody else listening, you can apply this to whatever else you might think would, short sleeping or having insomnia might cause, you know? And the other thing is, if you believe you're on a path to getting to a place where you have a better relationship with sleep, does it really matter what short sleep or having insomnia causes? Because, you know, if you're on the way to being in a better place, it's not going to last forever. The whatever implications may or may not be there are going to be fleeting, and you'll be getting better and better.
100%. And you know, to contextualize that, it's basically like saying, like, the question of is it a problem, like, that I have less REM sleep? You know, does that question itself help you? It really doesn't, because it just leads you to more pondering and wondering. And if you have less REM sleep, but you're overall sleeping better and you're happier, then it's not important. So, and the way that. Yeah, go ahead, Anna. Yeah.
One other thing about that is that so many of these questions, when we're struggling with sleep, so many of the questions that come up are very difficult or impossible to actually find an answer.
Exactly.
To. And so that's going to create another like hamster wheel of worry to stay on, because there's not, it's not easy to like go and find evidence to answer the question. And so releasing the question is actually going to be a lot more empowering to your sleep than trying to, you know, research and to figure out what's, you know, what the answer is.
100%. Exactly. Like so many questions are unanswerable. I love that word too, by the way, release. Just release the question is perfect. And I just want to say my go-to like analogy for that one is like existential questions who a lot of us have had. We're like, how big is the universe? You know, how many numbers? I don't know. There's all these questions and we never really get to the bottom of it, typically, most of us. But we sort of release the question and then we live happy lives without them. So you can definitely release questions and that will really help you. Mm-hmm. Cool. So let's go to the last one here, which is a little bit similar to one we've already talked about, but let's go over it. And this is from my namesake, Daniel, who's been a real supporter of the channel, pops into a question again. He says, hey, Daniel, it's Daniel. We've been at this for almost 2 years now, LOL. I get better, but then I always have a relapse. I got better after our last chat about the antibiotics. Did good for months, but now I moved and I'm living with my brother and my anxiety has been through the roof. Can you please give me some reassurance that this will pass again? I've been drinking to help my anxiety, but it only makes me sleep worse. Look forward to hearing from you, Daniel. So yeah, I'll let you go first on this one too. What are your thoughts when you hear this?
Well, thanks for still being here, Daniel. That's awesome. I love it. Sounds like there's been a change in your circumstance and this you're feeling anxiety rising up again. You said you've been drinking to address it some or reduce it. And what was the very last part? I was taking a note.
Oh yeah, yeah. Let's go ahead. I'll read it to you. Been drinking to help my anxiety, but it only makes me sleep worse.
That makes sense. Alcohol can kind of, I think, do a similar thing that sleep pills can do and help you not be as hyper aroused right when you're trying to fall asleep, but then can disturb your sleep later. I think the bigger concern with the drinking is that it's basically avoiding your feelings and they're not going to go away. And so, I would say, you know, you don't necessarily need to quit drinking, like become a teetotaler, but if you can shift and try to drink for enjoyment when you do, and then take some time and sit with your feelings. And I would say probably not at night to start out. Just sit with what's coming up and your anxiety and even go down the path of like, what is, you know, the thoughts associated with this feeling and what's maybe the worst case scenario. It can be really helpful. It sounds crazy, but it can be really helpful for some folks when you have this really strong anxiety to just kind of look it in the face. And often it can kind of disperse after that.
100%. And, you know, I think you opened by saying like there's this new circumstance and that's so important. Like when you moved and you're in a new situation, completely expected that there's anxiety. Mm-hmm. And by the way, and I'm going on a little weird side loop here, but sometimes I get a question of like people say, oh, before I used to be really anxious, but I slept well, or my friend has a lot of anxiety. She struggles with anxiety, but she's sleeping well. How's that possible? Well, I want to say that it's just because there's this brain has a safety radar, and sometimes sleep was never on the radar. And then you can be really anxious, but you never even thought about sleep in that context. So you sleep really well. And the difference between yourself, Daniel, and somebody who's never struggle with sleep is simply that it's been on the radar once. So when you have a new life circumstance and you start becoming anxious, then sleep pops, blips on the radar again. It's like, what if I don't sleep? And then it becomes kind of self-fulfilling. Then you sleep a little bit less. But again, there's nothing strange or unusual happening whatsoever. And the last thing I want to add here is just that a lot of times when we are, we have a struggle like with anxiety or with insomnia, We want, of course, to get to a place where we don't struggle at all. And you will. You can definitely get to a place where you don't struggle at all. But that doesn't mean a place where you never experience anxiety or never experience sleepless nights. They will always be there. And when you see that, they will always be there. But that doesn't mean to struggle. That can be really freeing, right?
100%. Yeah, I love that.
Perfect. So we'll just have one live comment here from Steven who says, "Hi, Daniel and Anna. In my experience, it's how you relate to troubling thoughts about sleep rather than trying to challenge or change them. Worrying about sleep is a futile problem-solving exercise," which I agree with. Like, it's how you relate to the troubles rather than trying to challenge. Now, I think this could be like, overall, I want to thank you so much for popping in, Stephen, and thanks for all the support. And I want to say, I think there can be times where you can challenge some thoughts and it can be helpful, but ultimately you like where you want to be is completely kind of letting go and completely kind of like letting go completely is where you want to be. But challenging can sometimes be helpful. What do you think, Anna?
Yeah, I think so, for sure. Trying to think if I have any examples that are popping up. This whole concept is kind of what we were talking about at the beginning is coming up again, which is the idea of moving towards something versus moving away from something. So that would be like trying to suppress your feelings or make sleep happen or like avoid wakefulness would be a way, and moving towards might be finding something that you enjoy when you're awake at night. So you move towards this state of enjoyment. With thoughts, I think that that's applicable too. Like, you can't fight off a thought, you can't say like, nope, be gone. But if you can find a thought that's maybe slightly different, maybe very different, and move towards that, then it's kind of like, what is challenging? What is changing? I would see it as, you acknowledge this thought and then move towards a different one. I think that would be what I do instead of like, yeah.
And I think what comes to my mind here is this is kind of this classic question actually of like, what to do when you have these thoughts that you this is not, there's thoughts that are serving me or helpful. They're kind of like thoughts that are not very pleasant. Then you can sometimes just dismiss them. Like my go-to analogy has become this one, which is like, I think I need to take some melatonin tonight. And that's probably not true, but I'm still thinking it, what do I do? Well, sometimes you can just dismiss it. You can be, which is kind of like challenge or change. You can just be like, nah, that doesn't make any sense. Like dismiss. And then like, that's it. I think that can be helpful. But yeah, like Steven says, when the thoughts become sticky, when you kind of like dismiss that thought and it's like, no, you really need to. Like when thoughts become sticky, that's when I think you're like, you can't dismiss that. You sort of have to go the opposite direction, like just tuning in, listening, and what does Steven say here? Relate to them in a different way, not challenge them, letting them be like that, right?
I really appreciate what Steven brought up, because I think when you hear someone say like, work on your thoughts or do thought work or something, it can be taken as that you should like, just like work really hard to think better, be more positive. And it's good to clear up that that's not what we're talking about. And that there is definitely like a need to notice and to at least notice, and accept and maybe dig into thoughts that come up based on how sticky they are.
I think Sasha Stevens on the channel, she brought up this great expression, which was like the paradoxical tightrope, which is it's like really that paradoxical tightrope whereby you often have to put in a little effort to be at a place where there's no effort. You have to do a little work so that you don't do any work. Something like that, right?
Okay. This reminds me of I just recently got into Bruce reading some stuff about Bruce Lee. I read a book, a kind of a biography.
Really?
Yeah. So,
I have to interrupt you right away. Like, where did you pick it up? Because I talked about it or just randomly?
No, I know you have a book of his on yourself, I think, or a book of.
Yeah, it's somewhere here. Yeah.
I've seen it. I've been meaning to bring it up. But my boyfriend is really into him. He has a picture on his wall with a quote. Yep.
Is this the one?
No. I'll tell you in a minute which one it was.
Yeah, sure.
It's a great book. I got it on Audible. But he talks about like a progression of human learning, where you are at first, you know nothing. You're completely open. There's nothing there. And then the next stage, you go into like this very structured, things are like the very, what do you call it? Diametric, or I can't remember the name, where it's like black and white.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Yes. And then you go into a stage where the two, you know, the different things are integrated, and but then the last stage is, again, you let everything go. You're an empty vessel, and it just flows. And I think that's so true for sleep. It's like really helpful to start out with it can be really helpful for a lot of people to start out with some, you know, structured timeless sleep window, having a plan for what you do at night. But the goal isn't really to necessarily do that the rest of your life, you know, but for a time it can be really helpful to kind of practice that. So
absolutely. And I think that what you're talking about is, I think it's kind of summarized in a Bruce Lee quote, which is something like, you know, you acquire the tool, you perfect using the tool, and then you dissolve the tool, or something like that.
Exactly.
And it's funny, like, and now I'm going to go on a Bruce Lee tangent here, but I learned so much from reading this book. Like, and one of the things perhaps that inspired me personally the most was how he was kind of trained in, I think, Kung Fu and Wing Chun, like those two like schools. And he came here to the States, and he was kind of like on a mission to like, to spread the word on those techniques. But then he realized that, wait a minute, there are some problems with like Kung Fu. It's too stylized. It's not really practical. And there's too many rules and things like that. So he was like, he went kind of like, you know, went rogue and said, I'm going to create like my own school, and I'm going to incorporate from that and things. And I feel like that, I kind of relate to that, because I feel like, that's like CBT is like that too. It's like, it's this great things about it, but wait a minute, there's some problems with it. We have to like go a little different like that. So I'm a real big fan.
Yeah. He's incredible. Yeah. The book was The Warrior Within.
The Warrior Within?
By John Little.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. All right. Well, we can learn a lot from a lot of places, including Bruce Lee. Alexa, thank you.
Yay. Thanks for being here.
And that's what I was going to say to you, actually. And thanks so much for coming on. And by the way, where are you with, have you thought about like what type of like offering you're going to have, or how you're going to work with clients and things like that?
Sure. Yeah, I will be, I'm kind of in the process of building a program, very early in the process, just to have some of the basics on like a video format. And then I love the live interactive coaching. So I'll have a component of that, and then like text support. And I'm getting things worked out, getting things set up now.
Love to hear this. And of course, when you have it set up and everything, you should be a guest again, so you could let people know that you're open. So thanks, Anna, so much, Anna, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much. See ya.
Bye, everyone.